by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, True Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Welcome into Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Of course, as we do every week, we chat with our friends at Wyoming Game and Fish Department, Brian Olson and Janet Millick. And Janet, this has been a very question-oriented week this week, as hunting seasons and hunting licenses can now be applied for. And, you know, that's why you guys are part of this show, is you like to answer these questions.
That's right. No, we appreciate all the questions that are coming in from the public. And it sounds like this was quite a question frenzy week this last week. And so we're happy to answer whatever is needed.
The main questions were the hunting license application period, which we are in that period at this point.
We are, and sometimes this always throws our Wyoming residents into a bit of a frenzy trying to get ready. But a lot of our emails that are going out right now are to remind our non-resident elk hunters and our spring wild turkey participants to make sure that they're getting their applications in. Those are the only two, along with the super tag, if people choose to participate in that, those are the only applications that are looking at a deadline here coming up January 31st.
You can file for your license, apply for your license anytime up until May 31st, right?
Right. That is our big deadline that comes up for our big species that most people hunt, deer, antelope, and resident elk. But our some of our coveted licenses have a different deadline because we want to make sure everyone's staying on their toes throughout the entire spring season. Bighorn sheep, moose, and mountain goat application deadlines are April 17th.
Which, that's a random date.
That's kind of what we said when we looked up that date this year. We were like, okay.
It's kind of an important date, though, because April 17th is the first day of the commission meeting. You know, where we set the seasons. And like I say, a lot of times that first day is when they do set the season. So April 17th, not only the day that you put in for a mountain goat, a sheep, or moose, but it's also the last day that you could move or change your hunt area. So let's say that, you know, the quota for the number of licenses available in area one is much less than it was the year before. So your chance of drawing might be a little bit less and you want to put in for another area. That day would be the deadline that you could change your hunt area in your application online too.
How far in advance, since they don't set the seasons until the 17th or so, how far in advance will people kind of have an idea of what it's looking like? Are there like prelim numbers that you go off of?
Yeah, we have prelim number. The numbers that are in the computer right now, if you're up to the hunt planner online, you can go and look at you know, the starting date and the ending date from last year. And really, if you think about it, Drew, the hunting seasons aren't set until April because it really bases a lot on the data that we collect during the fall hunting season, you know, the harvest success rates and stuff like that, the survey results, but also the winter. You know, a lot of places in the state right now, the winter is pretty tough, and we might have to reduce numbers of especially antelope and probably deer in some areas based on winter conditions and losing some critters. So that's why we try to wait, you know, until April when winter is usually about over to help us with those quotas for setting seasons.
So, Brian, a couple of years ago, there was a freak snowstorm that caused havoc on a lot of the animals and the animal numbers. If something like that happens, will that impact the numbers again? And then people can go and change until May 31st on their license?
Well, certainly that can happen. You know, we don't want that to happen, but it certainly can. And we would, you know, at least pull those out and let people know, even the people that probably put in for that. It's a good opportunity to send them a note or an email saying, hey, just to let you know what the quota has been. We don't have a quota anymore, like a doe fawn licenses. We don't have any more doe fawn licenses for that area that you applied for. It'd be a good idea for you to select another area or withdraw your license. You know, we try to do that, you know, beforehand. But, you know, Mother Nature can slap that snow on us anytime during the spring and early summer months type of thing.
But Drew, I also like to mention that while my whole life I've hoped that I'm not a procrastinator, I am the one logging in on May 31st to actually do the applications. And at that time, everything that's in there is pretty much final. And so people don't need to worry about the things that we're talking about now. We're speaking to those folks that are, you know, up early, ready, raring to go. They're doing their odds research and they're getting in.
So I mentioned that I had a couple of questions this week about the planner and about the date. And one guy also asked me, does it help my chances if I put my application in January compared to those in May?
Yeah, now at that point, I would not be the queen of procrastination. I would be putting in on January 3rd when it first opened. But no, it does not change your odds at any time. So as you are well aware, Drew, everything is now online. And the fun that that brings to everyone, you know, what if you have technical difficulties? What if you can't remember your password? What if, you know, your internet is down? So, you know, give it yourself, you know, a couple weeks time never hurts.
One of the things that does come up, Drew, sometimes from mistakes is if you put in as a party. So if you apply earlier, you know, in the process, then if you make a mistake, you have the time to change that and to get it correct. So that can happen.
Another great thing, the problem, I guess, that Wyoming has is there are so many species that you're able to hunt. You're able to go out and do so many, and maybe you want to do an antelope, a deer, and an elk hunt, but, you know, you maybe don't have the money to pay for all three, but you put in the application. Do you have to pay up front, or do you pay once you're selected?
It goes on your credit card right away. So it actually does go on your credit card. And then if you don't draw like your antelope license, that is put back on your credit card after the drawing, which is, you know, the middle of June. So it's actually going to be taken out of your credit card, but then put back in, refunded if you don't draw.
Awesome. Well, I always like when we can answer questions from our listeners. And, you know, another question that I got was from Allison, and Allison was wondering if her son, who's a teenager, had to go through a hunting safety course before he could apply or receive a hunting or fishing license. And Janet, what's the answer?
Absolutely not. Yes, get out there, do some fishing. No hunter safety needed for fishing, of course, and not to apply for any of the licenses. You still have plenty of time to get certified before you go hunting. January, February, March, April, May are fantastic times to take a hunter education course.
And this is a great thing for families to do. If you have younger kids and maybe you don't have one yourself, families are welcome to come to those.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think oftentimes, like you're saying, Drew, it sparks a lot of great conversation. You know, hunting ethics is always something that we really talk about, and everybody grows up with different ethics. Everybody has different experiences. And so talking through those things as a family and recognizing like, oh, geez, I may or may not want to take that long distance shot. I personally am not comfortable with it, or vice versa. So being able to have those conversations as a family and being the mentor to your kids is pretty critical in these situations.
Now, it's very encouraged for you to go out and take one of these classes as we've been talking. But if you can't get out there and get one of these courses, it doesn't mean that you can't hunt on your license. There's the Hunter Mentor Program. And Brian, tell me a little bit about that.
So the Hunter Mentor Program is if you are at the last minute in September, you want to go hunting the next day. And of course, you don't have a hunter safety card. You can actually go with somebody that already has taken hunter safety and has a hunter safety card and a license, and you can go with them as long as they are your mentor, and they can go onto our website and sign up as a mentor and have that form just to, you know, fill it out and print out. They'll have that with them in the field, and there's no age restriction. So if you're 45 years old and you have to have a hunter safety class in Wyoming, a hunter safety card in the field, you can go with somebody that is, you know, already has one. And become that person could be your mentor. So it's not necessarily just for kids. It's for anybody that lives in Wyoming that is required to have a hunter safety card. So anybody born after 1965 has to have hunter safety card in Wyoming.
So it's another little bit of confusion, but it is so easy to get it all ironed out.
It's one of those things where another thing that's online, you know, to sign up for a hunter safety class and all that kind of stuff. If you guys have problems with that, we do have a lot of people that call about that too, is call our gals at the front desk at any one of our Game and Fish offices, and they can help you through the process of signing your child or your family members up for a hunter safety class. And like, say, in Casper, we have them pretty continuously for the next 4 or 5 months in a row. So there's a lot of classes to sign up for. And if there's one that doesn't, you can't get into, you can always call us up and we can see if there, we can find room for you in another class or in that class by calling the instructor.
So get over to wgfd.wild.gov, find out about those classes and where you can get in on them. Brian, Janet, thank you again for all the insight. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports coming up.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian Woodward, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where we've made it into the new year, and boy, the opportunities are unlimited right now with hunting and fishing and even some ice fishing coming around.
Yeah, the ice fishing is actually somewhat encouraging. We had some really cold weather this week, and it seems like, you know, boys in the reservoir still had some open water in the middle. And there was guys, you know, in their boats fishing along with the guys on the shore fishing out of, on the ice. But, yeah, this colder weather, starting to see some things freeze up. And the boat fishing is going to be a little less opportunate. But the ice fishing should be good here pretty soon, just about everywhere.
I was down in Saratoga not long ago, just last weekend, and they were talking about having, they have a fishing derby coming up in just a couple of weeks. But they're kind of waiting for one more week to make the decision on that. And I know we got the Hog Derby at Pathfinder on February 1st and 2nd, which those, I believe the 1st is when that opened up for registration. So how are we looking there? I mean, Pathfinder has always been okay with ice already, but not in the center parts.
Yeah, you know, the main lake right now, I think, still has some open water. And if it's not open, it's probably very iffy ice at best. So, but you know, we're going to be like this whole next week. I don't even think this last week we had weather or temperatures over like 35 degrees.
Right.
So, you know, the nights are super cold, and you know, you look at Pathfinder, it's a little bit higher elevation lake. And so it's colder all the time up there.
So when people are thinking about maybe ice fishing, obviously you guys are stocked to the gills with equipment.
Yeah, you know, minnows have been in good shape all season. Even over the long Christmas break, we were able to keep minnows in stock. And as far as ice fishing, augers and accessories and poles and tip-ups, yeah, we've got a huge selection right now.
I know a lot of people, and we talk about this every year, but I think because people are still falling through the ice from time to time, you know, 4 inches is enough to walk on and start fishing, you know, safely.
Right.
And then, you know, the thicker you get, the better off you are.
Yeah, it was just a couple weeks ago, I think there were some guys camping on the ice out at Ocean Lake. And in the middle of the night, apparently, the ice broke loose off the shore, and they woke up to find themselves stranded in the middle of the lake and had to be rescued.
That might cause a little issue.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, ice fishing is not for the weak of heart, but also you need to be smart about it and, you know, bring your safety equipment, you know, flotation suit if you've got one, throw cushions, a little jet sled, something like that. You know, make sure that you're checking that ice conditions. And, you know, a good 3-4 inches is going to, you know, generally be good enough to hold a person up safely.
Now, I know that there are some of these reservoirs and lakes that really, when they get ice and it could be 10 to 12 inches thick. And Boysen's one of those where it's kind of like that. But then you get the ridges and people get a little false sense of security.
Yeah, those pressure ridges are no joke. I mean, you got to be super cautious around those. And, you know, you could be at Boysen and, you know, have to put an extension on your auger. You know, most augers are 28 to 30 inches. Sometimes you can get a 6 to 12 inch extension on there. And sometimes that's not even enough when it starts really getting hot and heavy over there. So just be cautious. Those pressure ridges, there's open water in and around them. And you know, there's been plenty of ATVs and vehicles that have fallen through those ridges.
Yeah, I'm sure at the bottom of that lake, there's a lot of treasure down there from all the guys that have kind of dropped stuff.
We could only imagine what's down there.
Obviously, if you're looking for that ice fishing equipment, stop on in to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And then think of what you may need for some bird hunting. I know the bird hunting's been pretty good around here, and not only goose and duck, but pheasant. You guys were out and shot your limit on that too.
Yeah, my son was in town with his girlfriend, and we made a trip out to old Riverbend Roosters and had a great morning hunt. Shot 15 birds, and it was a really cool experience because she's never done that, so she actually shot her first couple pheasants. And but it's all great opportunity. You know, Hendry's has some birds out there, and you know, there's lots to do. I'm not sure exactly what seasons are still open yet in terms of like huns and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, check the regs. Of course, rabbit hunting and coyote hunting and all that kind of stuff is definitely something to keep a guy interested in.
I definitely, you know, we've talked over the last couple of years, and you know, those coyotes can be a menace to society, and maybe even come in on you when you're hunting, like they did you guys.
Yeah, that was definitely a unique situation. You know, I've been goose hunting a lot of times, and we just happened to have a coyote that wanted to run on the outside of the decoys, and we were shooting 28 gauges with the number 9 shot tungsten, and we just folded that coyote up like you wouldn't believe.
Had no chance at that point.
No chance.
Well, and the best part about the coyote hunting is you don't have to have a license of any sort for that. But obviously you need to check and make sure you are in a place where it's okay for you to be shooting and all of those, you know, opportunities, because that's trespassing at that point.
There's lots of opportunities coming up. We've been kind of blessed. We haven't had a whole bunch of high winds. The weather temperature has been good. We can still get out and about and enjoy some of this winter shenanigans.
And speaking of winter shenanigans, at the first of the year, that's when the Wyoming Walleye Stampede registrations open.
Yep, we opened those up on January 1st to what we're quote-unquote calling our premier teams. And that would be any team that is going to be signing up for all three of the qualifying events. So those teams that are signing up for the three qualifiers will be able to sign up from January 1st to February 28th. After that, we'll take those teams, we'll randomly draw them into positions for the three events. And then March 1st, we will start accepting applications for those guys that are only looking to fish one event or two events, or just wanting to fish the Gov Cup. We'll start taking applications until we hit that that cap. We do have 140 team cap down at Glendo for that second tournament. So if you are wanting to get in, of course, we would like to see you fish all three events. But if not, March 1st, we'll start accepting applications for the single events. Do the same thing. We'll start drawing those teams in until we hit our cap.
So one of the things that people may be thinking, you said, well, premier all three. There's a benefit to fishing all three because you have to fish all three to make it into the final series, which will be back at Boise.
Right. Yeah. Our championship, sponsored by Skeeter Boats, is kind of a big deal for us. I mean, it pays out. We'll have a 60 team field. It'll pay out like 120 team field. We have a bunch of added money to it. That's also how we did the last event that we determined our team of the year standings. Team of the year, of course, we'll walk away with a big check, but they'll also walk away with free entries into the next year's season. So jackets, all kinds of stuff. So to be able to qualify for that is pretty important for a lot of guys. It's kind of, you know, it's the World Series, right? It's the Super Bowl of fishing for us. So, but those teams that are wanting to sign up to get into all three, you're going to have 60 days to do that. Of course, there might still be room in March and April and May. I don't know. But we've had such a high demand to get into the tournaments lately that I certainly wouldn't sit around and wait, because we're giving you the opportunity to sign up for all three now. But, you know, that Gov Cup might fill up after March 1st. And if you're hoping to fish all three, you may have just taken yourself out of that equation.
Yeah. And, you know, like you did say, though, last year was the first year of the Gov Cup and went over so well and so much excitement behind it. There was a waiting list at the end that, you know, people were looking on the outside just waving at everybody else that was fishing. So mm-hmm. get it early and you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be another great year. I mean, the fishing at Glendo has been phenomenal. So we are doing two events down at Glendo. Glendo, May 10th and 11th is our first one. The Gov Cup will be the 31st and the 1st, June 1st. And then we're going to go to Pathfinder for our third qualifying event, which will be the end of June, the June 28th and 29th. And then our championship will be August 9th and 10th over at Boys and Reservoir. So it's definitely a season you don't want to miss, and I think it should be good.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, does this mean my third or fourth year, I think, helping out and whatever, but it's cool to see the same faces, and those guys that really are dedicated are the guys that you're talking to at, you know, the 1st of January are beating down your door.
It's just like planning a vacation with your wife or you know, getting together with the old college buddies or something like it. I mean, if you don't plan it, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys, you know, they just kind of, a lot of these guys, you know, work long hours or have their own businesses, or they, you know, they're putting in for vacation requests around tournament schedules, and they use it to as a opportunity to hang out with their friends or family, make it a family trip, whether it's, you know, the kids after school's out, bring the whole family down there for 3 or 4 days and do a little pre-fishing, run the kids on inner tubes or skiing. And just, you know, we drive around and talk to a lot of guys at their campsites. There's a handful of guys that stay at hotels and stuff. But, you know, when you see the different groups of guys, they're like, oh, there's a whole bunch of Casper guys here. Oh, then there's a random Douglas guy that's hanging out with them. And, you know, it's like, well, how do you guys know each other? Well, just through fishing, we just became good friends. And, you know, they're playing horseshoes or cornhole or whatever mm-hmm. they're doing. And it's a neat dynamic. It's an opportunity to, you know, kind of plan to make yourself take some time off when, you know, a lot of us just work way too many hours.
Is this year 17th year? Wow, yeah. That's a long time.
17th or 16th? Our first one was in 2009, so I guess that's so
that'll be going 16. On 16. Yeah, yeah, 16. Wow, 16 years. That's wild. You can drive now.
Yeah, I can drive now, but I can't drive 55. Yeah,
that's right. Well, obviously, if you want to check out the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, you can go check out their Facebook page or website. Anything to get you geared up and ready for the Hog Derby coming up the February 1st and 2nd, or maybe you're heading to Saratoga to their Derby, get over and check it out, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, CY Avenue in Casper, or RockyMountainSports.com.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
And welcome back to the show. I am Drew, your host. And, of course, you can always follow along on the radio station's app and learn more about all the guests that we have on. And today we have Sean Blazak, who is the regional director for the Mule Deer Foundation of Wyoming. And, Sean, we always love talking to you, because I know that we're going to talk about some exciting things.
Yeah, it's always great to be on the air with you. And, you know, we love coming on and talking with you guys and letting people know what we're doing around Wyoming.
I was looking through my records the other day, and I believe it's been well over 3 years now that we've been communicating and getting the word out about the Mule Deer Foundation here in Wyoming on this show. And I know that some big things have happened in those 3 years. And it's awesome to kind of look back and see some of the jobs or the projects that have really come to fruition because of all the work that you guys have done.
Yeah, we've done quite a bit of work throughout the state and throughout the West. You know, mule deer don't know our borders, so when we're doing work on a border town in Montana or a border town in Colorado, it also helps us out. So it's a lot of cool work we get to do, a lot of habitat work, a lot of fence work, some research, some highway crossings. We try to get as much money on the ground as we can for mule deer so we can help them out as best as possible.
I was looking at stats that Wyoming Game and Fish Department put out this past year, but the trends in the Wyoming mule deer have really dropped since 1990. In 1990, There were an estimated 578,000 mule deer in Wyoming. And in 2023, the numbers were estimated to be around 216,000. That is quite a drop over the last 30 years.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's a trend that's happened in a lot of places in the West. And there's a lot of factors that, you know, contribute to that, including disease, habitat degradation, you know, urban sprawl, all that kind of stuff. There's no real one, you know, factor that you can adjust to help mule deer. You got to hit it on multiple fronts. And, you know, nobody's really sure which straw broke the camel's back, but we try to hit as many fronts as we can. And we focus a lot on habitat because usually if you have good habitat, you know, a lot of those other things sort of, you know, will self-adjust because, you know, if mule deer have good food and go into winter in good condition, a lot more can survive. And, you know, that winter is probably the most crucial time for mule deer to make it through because they sort of live the rest of the year just to build up those reserves so they can make it through.
And I would assume 30 years ago, there was no real concern with 500,000 mule deer in Wyoming alone. So, you know, people really never even probably considered the fact that we'd be down 300,000 in 30 years.
Yeah, I would bet no one did. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you know, I would have been not even hunting age then when that was really going. But even when I started hunting, there were doe mule deer tags in different places, multiple doe tags in different places. Now you basically don't see a doe mule deer tag in Wyoming because, you know, does are obviously your reproductive group of the mule deer, so we don't shoot any of them anymore. So, I mean, things have changed. People had different ideas back then, but that's why, like with wildlife management, it's always good to be try to be ahead of the game if you can and not be too, you know, far behind because most everything you do takes a while to take effect, too. So that's why we have to do stuff, even though it seems like we're doing stuff in an area where maybe they're doing well, is you want to keep them doing well. Or, you know, in other areas, you know, you're not going to see immediate results to everything. It's you've got to play the long game with wildlife, typically.
We had talked to Game and Fish in December a couple of different times because they had the open door meetings at multiple places all throughout the state. And I'm sure that you have talked with Game and Fish about some of these meetings and some of the information that came in. And I know that just talking to representatives from Game and Fish that people are very observant about what's going on around with mule deer and are really fast to offer up any kind of suggestions or ideas or questions of how they can help out. And I know that has to be pretty beneficial for you guys to know where you need to put the money and boots on the ground.
Yeah, and that is very beneficial. And we applaud Game and Fish's efforts, and trying something new this year is always good because keeping the public engaged is really important. And honestly, that institutional knowledge you get just from spending years and years in the field, even if you're doing surveys as a Game and Fish employee or whatever, which I used to do, I mean, yeah, you see year-to-year trends, but some people see stuff you may not just because of where they're at, and every year they're at the same spot, so they see when things change. So, you know, public's comment is very important and very crucial and helps the science of, you know, wildlife management. So we encourage that, and that stuff really helps out. And when the public's involved, it also really helps us out in getting, you know, larger grants and stuff for highway crossings, stuff like that that takes more money than you can fundraise efficiently. So that kind of stuff really helps out so we can leverage our monies and get bigger projects on the ground. So, yeah, public is key to wildlife management.
Which, speaking of public and being part of this movement to help the mule deer, you've got the first banquet for the year coming up here in Casper on the 25th.
Yeah, we do. It's out in Barnum at the hangar on the 25th of January. So you can get your tickets now. You can just go to muledeer.org/Wyoming and click on that event, and you can get your tickets there, or you can call me anytime. You can just find my number on our website at muledeer.org/Wyoming. So, yeah, that'll be a fun event. It's a good time, lots of guns, you know, outdoor equipment, art, all kinds of stuff will be up for grabs. It'll just be a good time with a bunch of fellow hunters and outdoorsmen and people who just enjoy mule deer in the outdoors. So it's a great time. We encourage everyone to come out. Those type of fundraisers are so crucial for us to keep doing the good work we're doing. So if you can make it, please come out, tell your friends and family. It'll be a good time.
And when you do come out, as soon as you buy a ticket or get a table, you're an automatic Mule Deer Foundation member, right?
Yes, and that's really important, too, because when you talk to politicians, you know, and other elected officials and, you know, people in different positions, they do look at how many members you have. And, you know, even if they may not care about a certain situation, if they realize, you know, 30,000 people care about that, that's their voter base. They're going to, you know, try to help you. So a lot of that stuff really, really helps us out with having more and more members. So we appreciate that, too. And if you do become a member, you get our magazine. You get to see what we're doing all the time. You know, you get some other benefits and perks as far as discounts on merch and stuff like that. So, you know, the main thing is you know you're going to be helping support conservation of mule deer and their habitat, which, you know, if you help mule deer, you pretty much help all wildlife in Wyoming.
The tickets for that range from $25 for the youth dinner all the way up to $5,000 for the banquet sponsor table. That gets you 8 seats and a whole bunch of cool stuff. If you get over to the radio station's app, you can get right in to connected with the Mule Deer Foundation. This banquet is coming up. Again, you can also go Mule Deer Foundation of Wyoming on Facebook. That's a great way to stay up to date with some of the things that have are going on and have gone on over the last couple of years. And Sean, I know that you guys really are busy all year round. I mean, there's really no downtime for conservationists and, you know, making sure that these mule deer are taken care of over the next 30 years instead of the decline. Hopefully we'll see an incline and an increase in numbers. What do you guys have planned on the docket for 2025 at this point?
On 2025, we got a lot of stuff coming up and planned. We have a few road crossings that we've helped fund that are going to be getting hitting the ground. We have a bunch of different projects down in like the Snowies and the Sierras. We have some projects near in the Bighorns. We have projects all around the state. We actually just got a, you know, almost a $2 million grant over near Dubois to do some work over there. So we've got all kinds of work around the state going. We have a one guy up near the Gillette Sundance area for us that's a biologist. We have two other biologists in the state that are employed by us that help facilitate these projects getting done. So we get a lot of good work done. And those biologists, I mean, they're mainly funded through grants. So the money you raise here will actually hit the ground. It doesn't go to pay them. I mean, almost 100% of their salary is pre-funded. So, but we do have those employees on the ground to help out. So we've just got lots of cool things coming up. And then we'll also have projects during the summer and stuff that you can come volunteer at, doing like fence projects or other habitat projects, stuff like that. So take, you know, keep an eye out for those too, because we always like getting people on the ground. And then recently, everyone knows about all the big fires. We did end up raising quite a bit of money for those to help with those too. And we're using some of our wire winders and stuff to help with some of the fence fixes and stuff out there, make sure they're wildlife friendly, the ones they re-put up and stuff like that. So there's all kinds of good projects going on. And we love working with all our partners at Forest Service and BLM and, you know, obviously Wyoming Game and Fish Department, who's probably our biggest partner here in Wyoming, and they do a great job.
It's interesting. I was down in Saratoga just a little while ago, and it's always fun to be there because the mule deer population in town seems to be pretty strong there in the Saratoga area.
Yeah, and sometimes that's sort of deceptive because a lot of in-town populations seem really strong, and you're like, oh, mule deer are doing great. I mean, you go to Casper, you can see giant mule deer all the time. Just go up on Garden Creek Road, and you're going to see some giants and lots of mule deer, but it doesn't mean the population is doing that well. Most of the time, mule deer take a long time to adapt to, you know, houses and stuff, and a lot of them won't. So actually, urban sprawl is really hard on mule deer because a lot of them just avoid it, even though it doesn't look like it when you go into a town and see those mule deer wandering around town. So it's cool to see them, though, and we love them in town, too, but just that caveat there that, you know, normally they don't like that stuff. They don't like disturbance. They usually try to avoid it, and sometimes it's a, sort of a false indicator of how good your, you know, population's doing. I mean, up here in Cody, too, it's the same way. There's mule deer all over town, and they have too many mule deer in town. But then you go outside of town, it's like, we're, you know, low on mule deer. So, yeah, it's always cool to see them, but remember, that doesn't mean that the population's doing great just because you see a bunch in town.
Now, when you do see a bunch in town, are there usually factors that cause that, like maybe people are putting feed out or they're not you know, restriction things that could be considered a food source for deer. I mean, that's got to be appealing, well, I would think.
The town thing, yeah, people feed them, but that actually is hard on deer because if one deer gets a disease and you start feeding them, they all congregate in that one small area and you're going to spread that disease and then they might all die. So we never encourage feeding them. But the other thing in town, obviously there's no predators that are getting them typically. You know, there's lots of feed of different types. I mean, they'll eat flowers, they'll eat grass, you know, different shrubs and stuff people plant. Because, you know, they're not grazers, so they're mainly shrubs and forbs. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of food for them in town. I mean, their biggest concerns in town are typically like getting chased by dogs or obviously vehicle collisions. So, I mean, there's some safety things that in town that they don't have out in the wild. I mean, you're not going to get ran down by a coyote in the middle of the town typically as a mule deer, or, you know, and there's not as many mountain lions in town as a mule deer. So there are some benefits to being in town, but that's not, you know, in town is not where most mule deer want to be. They'd rather be out, you know, in their natural environment where they can do their thing. But some of them have adapted to town, and that's cool that they have. You know, there's lots of species that adapt to city life. I mean, I think peregrine falcons, the most that exist, are in New York City because they have adapted to basically using skyscrapers as cliff edges to hunt pigeons. So,
and you know,
different things adapt differently.
Obviously, here in Casper, we have a great population of turkeys that have done the same thing. So.
Yeah, the turkeys have exploded. I go to my dad's house, and I'm like, well, you might want to run them off, because otherwise you're just going to be covered in turkey crap because they're trying to roost in some of his trees. I'm like, no.
Yeah, you got to stop that before it gets going.
Yeah, they've definitely exploded in the Casper area. So, you know, it's sort of cool to see them until they roost above your house or something.
Yeah, right. Start causing commotion and problems. But
yeah.
All right. Well, go to Mule Deer Foundation of Wyoming on Facebook or our radio station's app, and you can find all the information about the Mule Deer Foundation banquet. It'll be at the Hangar January 25th. Again, tickets start at $25 for youth dinner all the way up to a banquet sponsor table. Those range around $5,000. You can get raffle ticket packages. There's going to be live and silent auction items, and then prizes handed out all evening long. And it's a good time to, you know, really get out and mingle with other deer, mule deer lovers. And I know, Sean, every time you come in here, there's a bigger and bigger crowd of people that are looking to support the cause.
Yeah, it's always a good time, and more people show up every year. And, you know, it's always fun. So make sure you come out if you can and enjoy some good time with friends and talk about hunting and mule deer in the outdoors, and, you know, enjoy yourself. And, you know, if you ever want to learn more about us, just go to muledeer.org/Wyoming. You can also get your tickets there. So, yeah, and you can call me anytime. I'll always tell you what we're doing and how we're doing things. And remember to keep your voice heard. Always speak up to your legislators on stuff coming up, because we are coming up to legislative season, and there's always some, you know, wildlife bills that come up, and that's important for the public to become involved in, too.
Awesome. Sean Blazak with the Mule Deer Foundation, man. We appreciate it and always look forward to talking to you.
All right. Thank you so very much and have a great day.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Thank you so much for listening this week. And we have got a lot happening in 2025. As a matter of fact, the Wyoming Game and Fish Department has released their annual fishing regulations guide to update you on rules and any changes that occur for 2025, and there are quite a few. I know the AIS checks in some of the local reservoirs and areas, those are going to change up a little bit, and, you know, you're going to have to get used to that again. But of course, it's very important that you figure out and find out the regulation changes. And it's easy with the new way that you can get these regulations. If you go to the radio station's app or website, you can actually find a link where you can go and download the PDF version of the 2025 regulation guide. Now, in this guide, you're going to find things like fishing license information. There's no one in Wyoming that can fish and not have a license unless you're under the age of 14. You got to make sure that you go and, you know, there are different types of licenses that you can get. You can get the lifetime, or you can get any of the just one day or multiple day licenses. And always remember that it's important just for the future of fishing in Wyoming, that you get these different licenses that you need and make sure you buy that conservation stamp too. That's another mandatory thing to have. Now, when you open up the guide, there are going to be all different kinds of sections for you to look at and find the regulations, like the creel limits, any new regulations or any different things that are happening in the state this year. And then it even breaks it down even more specifically in areas. There are five different areas for fishing in Wyoming, and they're broken down for area 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then there are statewide regulations. So obviously these things, you know, they're a little different everywhere you go. And then some places may have different creel limits and special limits. And then there's the fishing in the national parks and state parks that may be a little bit different there as too. And then there are the programs you can become part of, the Cut Slam and the Master Angler programs, which are, you know, you go out and you catch this certain fish and you catch this whole list and you can get in on that different type of program too. So there are many options when it comes to fishing and knowing what to do while fishing, because if you're one place in the state, the regulations may be complete opposite of a different place in the state. So it's always important that you go and you get yourself educated, because they change every year. And if you get the guide, you'll notice that very light blue font color will be a change in a particular restriction or regulation for the year. So, you know, there are a few minor changes. There may be some things that will affect you, things that won't affect you. But what will affect you is the fact that if you're not up to date, it could end up biting you in the backside. So if you get over to the radio station's app, you can download and get that PDF, put it right on your phone so that you always have it with you. You could print it out, or you can stop by one of the regional offices and pick up one of the regulation guides for 2025 from Wyoming Game and Fish Department. We do appreciate you listening here on the program. And every week, we always like to bring you as much information as possible. And we appreciate it that you listened. And if you have any questions, maybe you want to ask Brian from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports about a certain item, or Sean Blazak about Mule Deer Foundation questions, or anyone at Game and Fish, you can always send us an email. Just go to our radio station's app or website and send in your question, and we will get it answered. That's going to do it for another episode of Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, presented by Rocky Mountain Discount Sports and Brooks Companies. We'll chat with you next week.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.